Hello, my darlings. Welcome back to another episode of Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, you got any news for us today?
Yes, I do, but I want to point out that normally you say another exciting episode of Radio Wasteland.
What
so
was
I like
it
the implication.
Time?
Oh, you just said another episode.
Yeah,
so
it's
I'm
not
like,
exciting this time.
Yeah, this episode is just, this is normal, par for the course, so, you know, stick around if you want.
Maybe I need a script. Do radio shows use scripts, maybe?
I don't know. I don't want you to use a script because the reason I'm here is to castigate you for whenever you say stuff like wrong or out of the ordinary. So, like, what would be the point of me if you had a script?
Well, in the spirit of that attitude, shut up and tell us the news because we're getting bored.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. So UFO sightings are up 51% this year compared to last year, rising in proportion to the intensity of the COVID-19 crisis, according to data from the National UFO Reporting Center. 20% of these sightings first occurred in April, one of the worst months for the COVID crisis in the U.S., and also the month where most of the restrictions first went into effect. It's unclear why the pandemic has led to such a glut of sightings. Maybe when you're unemployed, it's easier to watch the skies. In news that is not supernatural, but still bizarre and concerning, investigators trying to piece together the reason for the collision of Navy destroyer USS Fitzgerald with a container ship in 2017, a collision that claimed the lives of 7 sailors, discovered that it was caused by a, quote, unexplained course change. The change was entered into the log, but it is unknown who gave the order or why. 3 years later, the cause of this error is and is likely to remain a mystery, even to Navy investigators. Scientists are baffled by the appearance of rust on the moon, a satellite with no liquid water, oxygen, ice, or seemingly any of the other ingredients that cause rust in nature. Preliminary theories are that the rust was created by ice from asteroid impacts, or maybe that moisture from Earth's atmosphere was carried to the moon by solar winds. However, each of these theories has major problems due to locations and patterns of the iron rust that was discovered. Finally, Tom DeLonge did an interview talking about his UFO research that really didn't contain anything new, but did contain the quote, I wouldn't have left Blink 182 for something pie in the sky, which is real funny to me. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right. You know, these UFO sightings being up 51%, I'm not particularly shocked about that because, you know, people got a lot more time.
Yeah.
And, you know, they doubly so have a lot more time, you know. Not only do they have time they're staying at home instead of going out and having fun, but they're staying home. A lot of them aren't working.
Right. You know? That's true.
So their time is even double what we're really thinking. You know, it's a little off topic, but to wrap one's brain around numbers, I was listening to this podcast about shuffling cards and these statistics of shuffling cards and the mathematician on there gave an example to understand the difference between numbers. And I thought it really applied to today's day and age of millionaires, billionaires, trillionaires, you know, that a million seconds is about 11 minutes and that a billion seconds is about 36 years. And that a trillion seconds is about 36,000 years, you know, just to get the concept of exactly how huge some of these numbers can be. So when we hit the exponential amounts of time that people are sitting around doing nothing, that's a factor here. Definitely a factor.
Yeah, I mean, that occurred to me. But what's weird to me about this is that people are at home, you know, and most people live in light polluted urban areas. So, like, where are they seeing the UFOs? Or I don't know. Are people hiking more?
Yes. Yeah, they are.
Okay.
They are doing singular outdoor activities. I just don't know if it's at night. I have a different argument for this one. And that is for anybody who follows social media, I would say that crazy is up way more than 51%.
That is true. Crazy is, well, I guess we don't have the exact statistics on but crazy, but I imagine, you know, a very high percentage increase.
High, man. I get like friends of mine that I haven't talked to in like 5 years, like randomly like shooting me a Trump video either for or against Trump in my messenger as though they're doing me a favor. Like, oh, spreading yeah, this great happens. Information. And, like, I write them back and I'm all, are you spamming me? I mean, we know each other. What are you doing? And they're just all like, no, I just thought you should know. And I'm all, I shouldn't know. I don't do this. Don't do this. You know, it's like, take me off of whatever this list is. This is crazy. You know, I don't know. I keep wanting to go with, I mean, I know I'm getting way off topic on all of these, but I keep wanting to post. I try to avoid posting on Facebook anything political, but sure. I keep wanting to post up there like, hey, has anybody had a chance to think about who they're going to vote for yet?
Radical sarcastic centrism.
Right, right. But I'm just scared of the answer, you know. I'm scared that people aren't going to get it.
No. What you do is you post that, and then someone, you know, posts. They take it completely seriously, and they post. And then you just respond, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, totally.
That's what you do. You just shut them down, and then that's it. I mean, you lose them as a friend for life, but who cares?
Yeah, totally. I've lost a lot of friends for life. I'm frankly better for it. I'm better for it.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree. Losing friends is almost always good, but that's my opinion on this. Like, it means there is some irreconcilable difference that is probably you're better off not being friends with.
I also have another rule about friendship, just to help people out there in my off-topic way that I'm speaking today, and that is that every person needs to have one project friend. You need to have one friend that you're like helping out that takes a little bit of extra effort, that they got problems. They're your project friend.
Sure.
But here's the flip side. If you have more than one project friend, you're the project friend and you just don't know it.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah, that's my chance, my chanceism for the day.
The chance theory of project friends.
Right. Okay, the USS Fitzgerald. Every time something like this happens, I think to myself about like Hellboy and these movies like Star Trek and like the course change at night and blah blah blah. It's like maybe this course change saved all of our lives and we just don't know it. You know, maybe they were dodging the Philadelphia experiment. You know, it's like all the things that we'll just never know why this yeah. happened. Like, was it a time traveler that just, like, fixed the future by this one ship course change? We'll never know.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going with, is the time traveler theory. Like, you hit the nail right on the head. I'm pretty sure the USS Fitzgerald was going to, like, I don't know, start a war or something. But
right.
misidentifying something on a radar and being like, launch the nukes. And right. so the time travelers came back and changed it. And that's good because now we don't have to fight the mutant sewer people for
right.
water resources.
It was going to run over a seal that was like an ancestor of some like seal mammalian humanoid Gandhi of the future, you know, that was going to bring peace to everybody, but it was going to sever the,
Oh, I see. So right. like the seal people came back in time and
right.
Okay, yeah. It could also be that, like, Navy sailors are notoriously sleep-deprived to the point of, like, the level of sleep they routinely operate on is, I read somewhere it's basically the same as being three sheets to the wind drunk in terms of cognitive impact. So, that could be it.
Really?
But it could also be time travelers. Yeah, which is in itself concerning news. Like, we're the people we hand these ships to, you know, they're just like haven't slept ever, and we're just like, it's fine. Have this aircraft carrier try right. not to break it.
My brother was stationed on ships during the first Iraq war. I should ask him how much sleep he actually got at the time.
Yeah, I mean, this is just something I heard, obviously. It's...
Oh, no, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. I mean...
take it with the same massive chunk of salt, the same salt deposit that you take everything else on the show.
Oh, yeah, given the training they put, you know, these people through, they obviously put them through four situations like that, so I...
Yeah, exactly. Right. But I feel like at a certain point it is counterproductive because... Right.
The topic tonight is a little more having to do with fae paranormal and paranormal abductions. It has nothing to do with the weird politics going on Facebook tonight. Come on back for Joshua Cutchin as we discuss his book, Thieves in the Night.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. We bring you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites.
You'll hear from experts on national security, the environment, veterans affairs, world politics, and everything in between.
Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your John Deere Ag and Turf products.
Join us every Sunday from noon until 2. wethepeopleradio.us.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. Shasta Gas has been in business for 23 years, and my daughter, Karen, has worked here for 22 of those years. She started out driving our big delivery truck, filling tanks when it was 110 degrees in the summer and in the snow in the winter. Many years ago, she moved from delivery and field work to the office with my wife, Judy. Judy is retired, and now Karen is taking over her responsibilities. To further our commitment to locally owned and family-operated businesses in Shasta County, I'm introducing my daughter Karen to you, so if you call the office and I'm not here, ask for her or her husband, Jason. Karen, please say hi.
Hi, this is Karen Wehunt, Chuck's daughter. Since Chuck and Judy are spending more time together outside of the business, my husband Jason and I are here holding down the fort. We are here to answer any questions you may have and to continue the great service our customers have received these many years. Please give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Joshua Cutchin. We are going to be talking about his new book, Thieves in the Night, A Brief History of Supernatural Child Abductions. You know, when I read the title of this, Josh, I thought to myself, okay, so, you know, we look at stuff that's sort of trending in the paranormal because we want to, you know, provide topics and like a national park missings and stuff like that are definitely trending. And have been for quite some time, and I always thought it was interesting, but I'm all like, you know, if I was going to kill people, I'd do it in a national park. That's where they are. But sure. Thieves in a Brief History of Supernatural Child Abduction, when I read this subtag, I'm just all like, okay. And so, you know, I got to tell you, you know, I don't know. I think how did you get into this is a weird question to start with, so I'm going to start with something else and say, how far back do supernatural child abductions go? Like how far back are we talking?
You know, I don't think that it at all is really an odd question because it's very dark subject matter. You can look, you know, it depends on what sort of science you want to you know, engage with in terms of what the oldest civilizations are in, you know, on the planet. If you, as a lot of emerging scholarship suggests, believe that the Australian Aborigines are indeed the oldest, you know, extant civilization that we still have, then you would easily say it starts there. The Pimeric Quetethe, which I'm probably completely butchering, were sort of like, you know, sort of like land spirits, or could sort of be vaguely treated as fairy analogs for the Australian Aborigines. For that part of the world. You know, in terms of Western tradition, a lot of it can be brought back to two Hebraic, early Hebrew entities. Moloch, which was sort of a splinter sect of a pagan god that demanded sacrifice. But in terms of the tradition as we understand it, you know, in the West, specifically Lilith, who, depending on, again, different texts, different sources, was supposedly the first wife of Adam, pre-Eve. And she was banished for, you know, again, depending on your source, various reasons. But she was oftentimes blamed for stealing children, sometimes even from the womb. Some people claim that you can actually trace her origins back to an earlier deity from Mesopotamian mythology named Lamashtu, who sort of had similar attributes. But at least in sort of the Judeo-Christian tradition, it was Lilith who was stealing children. Some people say that she was stealing children because her own children that she fathered with Adam were banished, or, you know, all of her other children were demons. They're, again, very, very different, motivations ascribed to her, but a lot of it tends to go back to Lilith. Some people even claim to the extent that, you know, this is where the term lullaby comes from. Lilith Abai. That's why you're sort of saying, you're saying a prayer over your child as you put them to sleep. Similarly, Lilith could also appear as a black cat. Some people suspect that might be where the origins of, you know, cats stealing babies' breath, that superstition might have come from as well. But kind of all goes back to Lilith. Not Fridger Crane's wife, though.
Right. Similar attitude. The ex-wife, you know, right, for stealing children. The judge gave her visitation rights, dude.
You know, you know, speaking of which, you know, Lilith, you know, Kara's a big fan of vampires. I'm a big fan of horror. Lilith is a name that comes up not too uncommonly. And I always felt that Lilith being Adam's first wife was more of a construct of the 20th century. But I wasn't basing this off of anything. I just kind of assumed that it was. But you're saying that there are texts that say this way further back, huh?
I mean, yeah, you can look back, for example, the Jewish Zohar has an interaction where Elijah the prophet actually runs across Lilith, and she explains her motivations, that she's going to go off to the house of a certain woman and take her child and drain it of its blood. Again, that sort of vampiric motif that you're talking about as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's almost, you know, it's, I mean, it is in some sense apocryphal. Not only a lot of people really talk about Lilith, but I think that she's kind of become a catch-all and has, you know, sort of her figure, the figure of Lilith, has sort of syncretized a lot of other myths from that Middle Eastern region as well, regarding these sort of, you know, predatory female baby-snatching figures. Right. And you know, does she seem sort of like a little bit of a melting pot for a lot of these motifs, but a lot of other different entities that sort of spun off from her. I mean, you know, you could in some ways say that she was not only the first vampirist, but a, you know, you could sort of see how she could be the first, you know, succubus or the first witch, all sorts of things like that.
Right. Another way to marginalize people at the time who had very little power. I like how they put so much evil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's really funny. But
Tale is old as time, for sure.
Yeah, but an awesome aesthetic. I mean,
agreed.
Getting as a black cat, the whole...
Agreed.
It's all good.
Right.
Except for killing children.
Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, this might be off topic for our discussion tonight, but I am curious about this. Why did Adam and Lilith break up?
Well, again, you know, you look into these texts. So one of my, this is, I'm going to answer that question by going in a little bit different direction. I'll circle back around. One of my primary fields of interest is fairy folklore, specifically Western European fairy folklore. And if you look at exactly what the fairies were or where this particular sort of set of myths and legends originated, you'll get a bunch of different answers. You know, they're fallen angels according to Christian traditions, or they're spirits of the land or place, or they're the sacred dead. And there's no real good answer for any of these things. And similarly, you'll find not only Lilith's origins, but also, you know, the where Lilith's progeny ended up and why they ended up being what they are. You know, according to some people, Lilith's children, that she sired with Adam were what we call demons today, or what we call fairies today, or any number of things. And similarly, the reason for which she was banished by God, you'll find different reasons for that. The one that kept on cropping up in my research, which is a really, really odd thing, is that she would not submit to intercourse underneath Adam. She always demanded to be on top of Adam, which, you know, I mean, I wouldn't care, but
yeah, I'm lazy as all hell. I'm all on board for that.
but again, it ties into those sort of, you know, submission motifs that, you know, right, you were mentioning earlier with marginalized people. So that's,
I figured that was a fact.
She had such a strong top energy that they had to banish her from in the Garden of Eden. I love that.
Yeah, you know, and some people say that it was in her nature. She was created from filth rather than from dust. And some people say that she was just promiscuous with demons, and that's why she was banished. So you'll find, again, a lot of different variations on the same set of legends. Or, you know, not to be disparaging about people who I use legends and in myths and religion, all those sort of things compiled together.
Sure. I understand that any one of these is one to one person and something else to another, and you know, you brought up fairies there, and I had a feeling that this was going to be a big part of it because, you know, again, as a fan of horror movies and horror stories, this is a very reoccurring topic. You know, there's the things that live in the trees that take the kids, that come back and steal their form. There's the taking the babies. There's the sacrifice, you know. So,
yes, changeling myths.
Changelings, yeah. So where did this really start? I mean, I think the average lay person, which I am when it comes to a lot of these, would say that fairies really is an English-British thing. Is that where we're seeing it start? Or?
Well, you know, I guess kind of would be the best way to put it. If you look at, you know, fairy folk as a motif, there really are very, very few entities, or rather very few cultures across the world that don't describe short entities that tend to live underground, that tend to have an affinity for stealing children.
For over 45 years, Clyde's Home Entertainment is the place people turn to for locally owned expert advice on electronics that turn your home into a theater. Clyde's goes the extra mile for their customers. They have a huge selection of audio and video accessories and equipment. Whether it's the latest 4K television or a hard-to-find accessory, Clyde's is the place for all your home electronic needs. Clyde's is a full-service dealer for Samsung, Klipsch, Yamaha, LG, and more. They offer full-service Dish Network. Be sure to ask about the current monthly specials. The original, and still the best, Clyde's Enterprises, 1250 Hartnell and Reading. They have it all. 221-4144. That's 221-4144. Clyde's. Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Enjoy delicious Black Bear Diner food in the comfort of your own cave. Try one of our 9 new family meals to go, like the breakfast combo family meal loaded with eggs, thick-cut bacon, sausage links, and 4 huge house-baked biscuits. Or the chicken fried steak family meal for 4 with country gravy, cornbread muffins, and 2 large family sides. Starting at $19.99, our family meals to go feed 3 to 4, so try all 9. Order carry out or delivery at
Black Bear Diner.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest, Joshua Cutchin. We're talking about his book, Thieves in the Night, A Brief History of Supernatural Child Abduction.
So if anybody's wondering exactly what a changeling is, in the context of Western Europe, it was one of several things. It was either, the basic idea was that a child would be stolen, and it would be replaced with one of three things, either a sickly fairy infant, an elderly sickly fairy person, or a piece of wood or some other sort of detritus that was cloaked to look like a child. And generally speaking, they would be very listless. They would be ill-tempered. They would consume and consume and consume and would eventually die. That's typically the narrative that you'd find. And of course, this would be a changeling. It wouldn't be your actual child. It would be a fairy imposter. But if you look at sort of the motif of the changeling and its originations, you can find it all the way back, again, in Abrahamic tradition. Changeling stories don't really appear in pre-Christian Ireland, which is where we normally associate the fairies with being. Again, in the Zohar, which is a Hebrew text that I mentioned earlier, it's said that if you thought of someone else during the conception of your child, that child would essentially be a changeling. St. Augustine spoke about this idea of these children who were basically, you thought that they were your children, but they would actually be children of the devil. Similarly, interestingly enough, Martin Luther, of all people, claimed to have run into an actual changeling himself. But it definitely has older roots than that. I think in the 13th century, William of Auvergne mentioned this, used this term called cambio or cambini to mean these sort of half human substitution, children of substitution. Interestingly enough, I say Abrahamic, I mean that not just in terms of Judaism and Christianity, but also in terms of Islam as well. It's startling to read some of these stories from the Middle East where you could literally substitute everything for it, for Ireland or the Christian faith, and it would read exactly the same. Changelings were also something that the jinn in Middle Eastern and Arabic folklore would do as well. They would take human children for their own and leave something else behind.
You know, it's amazing. Sorry, go ahead, Kara.
Well, I might be getting ahead of myself here, but in terms of, like, thinking about why this is that all these cultures have this myth, is it credible to think, you know, sometime in prehistory this developed and it sort of spread between all these cultures, you know, before the invention of writing? Or do we have to explain it by saying, you know, there's something in nature in all of these?
Well, you know,
just everywhere that causes these myths to arise.
Well, good question. My first book was on this idea of the food taboo, that if you were to consume food in fairyland, you'd be trapped there forever. Mm-hmm. And that's another belief that you'll find on literally every continent amongst every indigenous peoples. So the thing that I find interesting about that particular question of yours is that we really have three options here. We have one, that there was some sort of cross-contamination of cultures, which would imply the fact that the world was a lot more globalized than traditional mainstream historians want to admit. So that's weird and anomalous, right?
Or that this topic goes back so incredibly far, you know?
Right. Yeah. To like the first civilization.
Right.
And then it's been preserved in that sense. Two, that, a Jungian collective conscious is indeed a thing. Or three, that there's some sort of objective truth to these as actual entities, actual forces that we interact with. All three of those are really
pretty
startling.
Strange. Yeah.
All three of those are strange, but you know, people will say, oh, it's a universal motif, et cetera. And it's like, well, there's some implications there. So I really don't know. I tend to suspect, I hesitate to say believe, but I tend to suspect that there is an objective reality, to some of these stories. I do think that mankind interacts with non-human intelligences, or at least intelligences that if they come from, you know, at least in a Jungian way, if they come from mankind or end up being so externalized and alien that we assume that they're some sort of non-human intelligence. But there is something that people are interacting with in a lot of these different stories. The changeling thing, I have a whole chapter in my book dedicated to the fact that as this trope of the changeling took hold, especially in more recent centuries, it was tragically used to justify infanticide, particularly in the case of children who were developmentally disabled. And that's I always have to say that when I say that. I think that changelings, you know, there was something to it, because obviously in, I would say, a majority of the cases, a gross majority, probably 90% of the cases that you hear, it's somebody who's looking for an excuse to kill a, you know, a child with disabilities, which is,
you know, that very much makes sense, and it's not a bad place to go. You know, I mean, think about the world now where everybody looks at racism from the past and everybody goes I'd be on the right side of history and be all like, well, if we all would have been on the right side of history, history wouldn't have been the history that it was. You know, history is not a pleasant place to be in a lot of these situations, and I can totally see that as being the case. You know,
I mean, that's very true. I mean, like, what are we doing today? What are we saying in this conversation that in, you know, 50 or 100 years is going to be looked at anathema, you know? To put that detail in perspective, there's a book that I came across in my research that I always, again, I feel like it's part of my responsibility to acknowledge this because it's such a startling statistic and to sort of raise awareness of this topic. There's a book by a scholar named Elaine Farrell called A Most Diabolical Deed, and she looked at a 50-year period in Ireland, and she looked at infanticide of children who were less than 3 years old. So here are your parameters. 50-year span, Ireland, which is about the size of Indiana, and children less than 3 years old. So if they were 3 years in one day, they didn't make the cut for her study. In that time span, she found 4,645 cases of infanticide, which is astounding. Obviously there was, this is sort of part of the culture. And you know, if you look at the heavily agrarian, culture of Ireland during that period, you know, and you had four kids of your own already, and you had this kid that was going to take up resources and wasn't going to help on the farm. I'm not going to say it's understandable because I don't think it's justified at all, but you can kind of sort of see what people were thinking.
Yeah.
In doing that, as horrible as it is.
Look at historically, you know, I'm sure that they were, you know, more often girls than boys, I'm going to guess.
Well, I mean, that's interesting if you say that, because, you know, not only were the changeling stories typically about girls, I mean, I can really count on one hand the number of, changeling stories were typically about boys. I can count on one hand the number of changeling stories I found about girls, but also developmental disabilities tend to, you know, medically speaking, impact males differently than females. So, you know, maybe, yeah, it's a very sobering statistic, and people have tried to figure out if there was a specific suite of disabilities that people would cite as being, oh, that means they're a changeling. There are a lot of different candidates that I go through in the book. Things that you find, these behaviors of the changelings do things that sound like autism, or they sound like spina bifida, or these different things. And there are some really compelling candidates, and it might not be exactly one answer. At the same time, you know, there are some stories that you have to wrestle with that get really quite fantastical. And, you know, this idea that all this can be explained by some sort of developmental disability kind of goes out the window when, you know, the changeling sits up in its crib and talks to you and flies out the chimney, you know. So, sure. You know, yeah. And you know, some of those are apocryphal and folk tales.
As kids with autism do.
Yeah, right. So some of these stories are, it's really weird. They sit at this intersection of historical fact and apocryphal folktale and legend, and it's really hard to separate them out sometimes.
And I'm sure it's extra difficult because we're dealing with a, well, you said that you have twins, and, you know, I've had kids, and, you know, it's a human spanning fear is with your children. And, you know, that was part of when this topic first came up, I'm just all, well, you know, I mean, people are scared of their kids, and they're scared of what's going to happen to their kids. And when other people lose their kid, and, you know, maybe they lie to their kids to try to get them to have the fear to stay close. And those were the thoughts going through my head. But, you know, I'm a little disappointed in man when we talk about this, how much of it seems to tie to sexuality and progeny. You know, so much of it seems to be tied to sort of arrogant factors and not protective factors.
Well, and, you know, that sort of compounds itself, especially, you know, I keep on going back to, even though I outlined the fact that fairy folklore in the broadest sense is really a worldwide phenomenon, I keep on going back to the British Isles, specifically Ireland, because that's where you find the richest vein of this changeling tradition. But in those stories, it was, you know, the most vulnerable category was children, and the second most vulnerable category were women. So, you know, it was definitely built into, you know, some sort of power structure of the time as well. You know, there were many a marriage, I'm sure, that was called off because the man suddenly decided that his wife was a changeling. There's a very famous case of a woman named Bridget Cleary, whose husband was convinced that she was a changeling, and he actually ended up, through several of the methods prescribed to determine whether or not someone was a changeling, actually ended up killing her. And if you want an idea, we can go into those methods. We don't necessarily have to, but if you are familiar with the sort of methods of proving witches and witch trials, it's sort of along the same idea. The idea was that if you were to abuse a changeling enough, that its people, the fairy folk, would not want to see one of their own abused and would rush in and re-exchange your child for one of theirs.
That's weird. So it's like justified to beat him.
Oh, I mean, that's beating is kind of the least egregious. Yes, it's the least egregious. I mean, leaving them at crossroads, putting them in open graves, pinching them with iron tongs, roasting them above a fire. Some people have claimed that this is one of the origins of the term, trial by fire.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Are Women of Vision.
Hi, I'm Haley Clandenning.
And I'm Maurice Brown.
Join us for the Women of Vision show Tuesday nights from 6 to 7.
Women of Vision is a movement, women empowering women, locally and globally. We connect female professionals and entrepreneurs and encourage women to collaborate and achieve their personal and professional goals.
With a spirit of integrity and excellence, we will motivate you to thrive, activating your unique abilities. Join us Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR 96.5 FM.
Hello, I'm Patrick Henry Jones, and I'm running for Supervisor District 4. From 2006 to 2014, I served on the Reading City Council, and most of those years, I also sat on the Indian Gaming Local Community Benefit Committee. Through the Reading Rancheria, we donated millions of dollars to the City of Reading, Shasta County, and many special districts. This much-needed money was allocated for things like the Reading Fire Department's ladder truck, and positions in the Sheriff's Office, and positions in the DA's Office. I'm Patrick Henry Jones, and this is why I support the tribe. Paid for by the committee to elect Patrick Henry Jones, Supervisor District 4.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW Renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Joshua Cutchin. We're talking about his book, Thieves in the Night, A Brief History of Supernatural Child Abduction. I tend to put him in two different categories, although I understand that there's a lot of potential crossover because we don't really understand each other. I think of supernatural and cryptid as being kind of cryptid, maybe in between. Is there, other than UFO evidence, is there any physical evidence in the world that's in question about fairy folk or anything like this? Like, do we have a tiny little foot? Or, you get where I'm going with this. Like,
yeah.
We got footprints, we got some scalp up in Nepal or something, there's a few things that people are questioning. You know, when it comes to fairy folk, is there any physical stuff that people are questioning?
So the short answer is yes. But I'm skeptical and accepting of these sort of little bits of evidence all at once, and I'll sort of elaborate on that in a moment. There are bits of fairy ephemera that have been collected over the years. There are certain castles that you'll find in Scotland that, you know, have framed alleged little bits of a fairy flag. You'll find churches in the British Isles that supposedly have, you know, a tiny chalice that was taken by someone who had visited fairyland and picked up that chalice from a fairy hoard. One of the most compelling things that I've seen, or that I've not seen personally, but I've read about, is a tiny, you know, tiny, like, inch-long shoe that is, you know, braided, and it's made out of leather, and they analyzed it, it was actually made out of mouse leather, which, you know, the idea of someone killing and skinning a mouse and tanning its leather with a little is humorous. But at the same time, the idea of accepting fairies on that sort of physical basis, I just can't go that far. I tend to think a little bit more dualistically, in terms of somebody along the lines of, you know, Patrick Harper or even Jacques Vallée or somebody like that. I have a real problem with the way that a lot of people research paranormal / Fortiana. They're really obsessed with this dualism of physical versus non-physical. And I think that's really a fool's errand. You know, people want to say, for example, my last book and this upcoming book is part two of it, are both about Bigfoot. And after looking into it, I'm pretty convinced that there's a very strange non-physical aspect to Bigfoot. But people say, well, Bigfoot's got to be physical. It leaves behind hair and footprints, and, you know, it leaves behind, you know, it craps in the woods and all this. But, you know, if you believe in ghosts, ghosts can leave behind handprints and footprints, and they can slam doors and they can write on walls. So this idea, I think that we really need to separate ourselves from this idea that things have to be physical or non-physical. And in terms of stuff like these fairy flags or these fairy shoes, or even in the case of, you know, alleged UFO metamaterial or UFO crash debris, I tend to think of them much along the lines of something like apports in terms of, you know, psi research, or the sort of apports that you'd get in legitimate seances or in legitimate poltergeist cases. The idea that somehow things can perhaps even manifest literally whole cloth out of nothing, I think, is a little bit of a different sort of approach to look at it. Because there does seem to be this sort of aspect to a lot of these phenomena that implies, at least in my sense, that they really have the keys of the car when it comes to where we're going with reality. So I think that the fairy shoe is compelling, but I don't think it's necessarily evidence of, you know, a literal race of little people. I think we're still dealing with some sort of spirit phenomena. For anybody who's sort of, again, having trouble wrapping your head around that, not only think of the ghost example, but also think of some of this research that's gone into the some of the research from folks like Dean Radin or Daryl Bim or Pim von Lommel, people who are really looking to expanded consciousness studies and psi research. In the case of psi research, it's all but settled science, in my opinion, settled laboratory grade science, that your mind can have a physical impact upon the world around you. And that's literally the non-physical being made physical. So that's where I tend to land with stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, in terms of incontrovertible proof of any of this stuff, no, it doesn't exist. But I think in some ways, I don't think that's the point. You know, people on the UFO side of things are constantly pushing for some sort of disclosure, like the United States government is going to confirm the existence of extraterrestrials or you know, UFOs, whatever they may be. And I don't think that that's the point behind this phenomenon. I think true disclosure of any type really sort of lies within yourself. You've got to convince yourself of the overwhelming body of evidence. And that's kind of the most important thing. That might be the reason that these things exist, in my opinion.
Right. Wouldn't it be awesome if the government came out and said, UFOs don't exist, but this is fairy disclosure.
my good friend Greg Bishop has a saying that I've adopted, which is that UFO researchers aren't telling the government everything that they know.
Yeah.
I really think that there's a lot more. I think that the authorities have a lot more questions than they do answers, honestly, about a lot of this stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end here. Man, I have really enjoyed this topic.
Yeah.
This is a topic that I was really interested in. And I've really, really enjoyed it. So for the audience, you've been listening to Joshua Cutchin. We've been talking about his book, Thieves in the Night, A Brief History of Supernatural Child Abduction. So you have a speaking engagement, Strange Realities 2020 conference, September 25th through the 26th. What's up with that conference?
Yes, it's put on by my good friends, Serviel Stevens and Adam Sane from the Conspiranormal podcast. And you can find out more about that at the website strangerealitiesconference.com. Yep. And you can find details there. It's a really swell lineup. I wish it was an in-person conference because those are always a little bit more fun, but nice. This is where we are right now.
Well, look so at that's the happening. See what they're having to do, you know?
Yeah, right.
Hopefully you don't have as many awkward clap moments.
Yeah, I was about to say, hopefully it won't be quite as awkward. My latest book was just released in May with my co-author Timothy Renner from the Strange Familiars podcast. It's called Where the Footprints End, High Strangeness and the Bigfoot Phenomena. It's volume one of two. We didn't want to write two volumes, but we were looking at this and like, this is a lot of information. So volume one came out this past May. I'm very thankful that it seems to be really interesting a lot of people, and volume two should be out later this year. My co-author just released the cover artwork for that, so we're really excited to get that that off our plates. So
that is exciting. So you know, I see that you can get your book on Amazon, but do you have a preferred location for people to get that, or do you prefer to send them to
you know Amazon? I before everything was shut down, I would always say, you know, go to your local bookstore and ask for them to order it, you know. Up until my last book, all my other books, A Trojan Feast, which is about the food taboo, The Brimstone Deceit, which is about supernatural smells, and Thieves in the Night, which is about supernatural child abduction, are all published by Anomalous Books. And if you can go to your local brick-and-mortar store and order it that way, you know, please do. I really lament the death of so many independent booksellers. Yeah. The latest two books, because they're self-published by Timothy Renner and I, are only available, unfortunately, from Amazon. But again, you can often go to your independent bookseller and sort of bring them into the loop, and they can order it for you as well.
And where's the best place for people to find out more about you?
JoshuaCutchin.com, JoshuaCutchin. I say this in every interview. I've been saying it for years. I hope to blog more, but that's definitely the – but in terms of my books and information – yeah, right, yeah. In terms of my books and where to find me and keep a running tab of all my interviews, I keep all that very much up to date. So if you're really feeling masochistic and want to listen to, you know, three straight weeks of me, that's your one-stop shop.
All right. All right. Well, I have a feeling some people might be, because this was a really, really fun
topic.
Very
interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, y'all. Thank you so much.
And then hopefully maybe sometime you come back on because, you know, your Bigfoot.
Love to talk about Bigfoot.
And then supernatural odors. I mean, that kind of piqued me right off the bat right there, you know, because as a horror movie fan, you know, there's always the thing of like, you know, sweet smells are ghosts and putrid ones are demons and stuff like that. I mean, I'm getting this from horror movies. I don't know. We'll have to have you come back on and tell us all about it.
It's a whole complicated thing, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've been listening to Joshua Cutchin right here on Radio Wasteland.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.